I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we will continue our exploration of the legacy and impact of Indiana's longest-serving Chief Justice, Randall Shepard. We talked with Shepard Monday, the day after his official retirement, about his 25-year tenure as Indiana's Chief Justice. In that interview, which you can hear on our website, www.wfyi.org, Shepard described the ways he worked to change both the court and the state. We'll talk today with two guests who have followed the Shepard Court closely: Indiana University Public Policy Institute Director John Kraus and Indiana University Professor Sheila Kennedy. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the tenure and legacy of Indiana Chief Justice Randall Shepard. We're fortunate to have as our guests John Kraus, who is Indiana University Public Policy Institute director. John, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Good to have you here. And we also are joined by Sheila Kennedy, who is an IU professor with a title that's probably as complicated as anyone's, Political Science and School of Public and Environmental Affairs, SPIA we call it. Sheila, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. Should also do a disclosure real quickly. Sheila and I are part of a club in that we both have been executive directors of the what was then the Indiana Civil Liberties Union and the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana now. Just wanted the audience to know that. You can join the conversation today by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to start really with, overall, what has been the impact of Randy Shepard's tenure as Chief Justice here? Where were we when he started? Where are we now? And how much of that can be attributed to him? I'm going to start with Randy Shepard. I know that, or John Kraus.
Yeah.
That's a sweeping question, but it should give you some room to run.
I want to step back a little bit.
Okay.
Because a lot of these summaries of Randy's term almost can border on being his obituary, listing all those things. And I guess I'd like to just start by saying Randy's a good guy. Mm-hmm. He can shed a tear, he can bellow a laugh, and he's got a heart. And between Amy and Maddie, I think those are things that are important. The rest of what we're going to talk about for the next hour is quite an accomplishment. And I think the most significant thing is that Randy, by his leadership and that of his colleagues, made the Indiana Supreme Court relevant and significant, not only here in Indiana, but across the country. When Randy came to the court was okay. I think Hoosiers tend to accept being okay, and that's fine. Randy, over his tenure, thought the court could be more than okay. It could be good. It could be a trendsetter in terms of having a real mission to help Hoosiers solve problems. And that's what the court was all about. And I think I look around, one of the first significant things is, can the Supreme Court deal with the most important cases that come before it? Mm-hmm. You know, as he said when he was interviewed, piles of cases come up for criminal appeals, which are very valid, mm-hmm. but they clog the court. The other thing, does Indiana's judicial system reflect Hoosier citizens and the diversity of Hoosier citizens, both in front of the bench and mm-hmm. behind the bench? And I think he's led to a real sensitivity to helping minority education, diversity in education, giving those that may need some help with the CLIO program, some help in law schools around Indiana, and then be sensitive to women and genders and the diversity of the court. So those are all significant things because the court is a living, breathing institution And it's there to be a partner with the other two branches of government.
Sheila Kennedy, I'm going to pose the same question to you.
Yes.
And then we'll come back. There's an awful lot there, so we're going to come back and take pieces of it as we get there. But please give me the overview.
That's fine. And I think both John and I first of all, I would agree with everything John said. But I also think that if you had to pick out the one factor that has separated Randy from many of those who came before and probably many who will succeed him, it is that he understood, as I think very few lawyers do, and John and I are both lawyers, we're not casting stones here, he understands that structure and system ultimately matter perhaps more than personality and the bona fides, if you will, of each person on the bench. Where I think Randy has made an incredible impact in Indiana is on recognizing that the administrative apparatus of the court is as important as the folks sitting on it. That it, if you are going to do what I think he very strategically set out to do, which was to elevate the opinion of average citizen that average citizens have of the court, you have to create an infrastructure, if you will, that makes courts operate more fairly. That gets into some of the diversity issues that John's talking about. I think what he did was work very hard and very strategically on the administrative, what you might call the back of the house mm-hmm. of the court system. And in the more obvious way, in the education of Indiana citizens about what courts are, what judges do, what you can expect courts to do. And ultimately, I think that, I mean, he has presided over a very significant transition in the way the courts operate in Indiana. And that began, I think, as John alluded to, with his, no pun intended, shepherding through mm-hmm. the change that allowed the court to escape having to hear every criminal appeal. And, of course, that was crowding out a number of cases of civic importance.
Yeah, but let's step back and see what the situation was when Randy came on the bench.
And that's where I want to go. And talk a little bit about, because we talk about this now and the stories that have surrounded, his retirement from the bench, make it sound like that he's
gone.
Yeah, well, and not just that, but he's this universally beloved figure.
Oh,
and at the beginning, we've never seen anything in the state Supreme Court justice has been as controversial.
Let me go
as
back
he was.
Even before that.
Yeah.
Indiana, like so many other states around the country, elected their justices of the Supreme Court in a partisan manner.
Mm-hmm.
And right before Randy came, in the late 60s,
way.
Indiana had a significant constitutional amendment mm-hmm. that took the the justices or mm-hmm. judges, as they called them then, out of partisan politics. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like the last hurrah. So that when Randy came on the court was going through a transition so that there were several of those folks that were there that were elected as a reasons of Democrat-Republican mm-hmm. machines. So you take that, and the Chief Justice job used to be rotated around, and it was they'd figure out whose turn it was the next time. Then all of a sudden, Bob Orr, who's the governor, decides that it's time to make a change in the court, and that was significant. And no disrespect for the folks who were there, but that meant the aircraft carrier was moving,
mm-hmm.
And it took a while to get that done. And, we're all human. Nobody wants change.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the old guard and those that were associated with the old guard were threatened by this new young guy who had only been on the trial bench to mm-hmm. come up, and all of a sudden he's the new guy. Well, lo and behold, now the Judicial Nominating Committee, which picks the justice of the Indiana Supreme Court, was going to possibly consider that the old guy's rotation system wasn't going to work anymore, and they were going to appoint Randy. Well, that shook things up. And unfortunately, that put Randy in a very difficult personal and professional position. And I think it's a tribute to Randy that he put his head down and he was going to survive. Mm-hmm. And but the storms and the wind was pretty fierce.
Mm-hmm. Let me, Sheila Kennedy.
Yeah, let me add to that. I think that his ability to get through that very tumultuous period is also attributable to something that everybody who talks about Randy in these obituary terms recognizes, which is he is a very good example of civility in a and civility is something that is increasingly rare, but it wasn't too much in evidence when he took over the position. And he was really, I don't remember how many years younger than the next oldest person on the court.
He said here on Monday that he was 38 at the time, and the next youngest was 55, and everybody else was in the 60s.
Yeah, and they'd been there around 60s, a while. So. But, you know, Randy, and just what Sheila was talking about, it, to me, personifies responding to the call of public service.
Yes.
I mean, you have a cum laude graduate from Princeton and a Yale law graduate. I mean, the fellow could write his ticket and do anything, but he decided he'd return to Evansville and he'd help a mayor of Evansville out. He tried running for mayor, didn't work, and then he tried running for Congress, it didn't work. Well, that's public service in helping people. So I think with that kind of fortitude and goal to get through what Sheila said, I mean, this was a tornado, and it was a personal tornado.
It was
which
ugly.
He survived.
Oh, it was, yeah. It was
very
was
ugly.
Nasty. We are talking today on No Limits about the tenure and legacy of retiring Chief Justice Randall Shepard. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to pick up on something, Sheila Kennedy, that you said about he recognized that the infrastructure was important, and he, you know, he worked at it very hard, and he worked at it very strategically, you said. In what ways? I mean, how did he specifically change the infrastructure of the court system in ways that make differences?
Well, the first, obviously, was the his leadership in getting the constitutional change that was necessary so that the court could have a more balanced caseload. And I think most people don't think of, you know, you think of a judge, he gets his black robe on, he sits there, and he issues a decision, and that's what a judge does. But if he never gets a chance to hear the case, obviously you don't have a decision. So those kinds of things that I think escape the notice of most citizens can be incredibly important because, as John and I both know, one of the legal truisms is justice delayed is justice denied. And those kinds, I mean, that was clearly a more, a larger effort. But there have been consistent efforts over time to make the system work more smoothly, to ensure that cases go through the process as expeditiously as possible. And those kinds of things, along with, as John pointed out, some of the efforts to ensure that people who don't have money for private lawyers nevertheless get representation, all of those kinds of things really address not just courts, but justice.
We are talking about the tenure and legacy of Chief Justice Randall Shepard here on No Limits. We are joined by our guests, Sheila Kennedy and John Krause. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. nolimits@wfyi.org. I'm John Krause. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the tenure of Indiana Chief Justice Randy Shepard and his legacy. Our guests are Indiana University Public Policy Institute Director John Krause, Sheila Kennedy, who is an IU professor, political science, and the School of Public and Environmental Affairs, SPIA. We were talking before the break, and you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 about the ways that you don't necessarily see that Randall Shepard changed not just the Supreme Court, but the entire court structure here in the state of Indiana, specifically the infrastructure, the stuff that builds into that. John Krause, what's an example of another way that people wouldn't necessarily see that wasn't actually in the courtroom?
Yeah, I think the people's representation by the legal system, I think, has improved drastically over the years. Indiana adopted a mandatory continuing legal education. You know, surprise, when you get out of law school, you don't know everything. And I was on the CLE Commission for a while, and the whole goal there is how can you be a better lawyer and how can you learn something that's current and new? That was mandatory. Having guardians ad litem and representation for children that have no one to be their advocate. That's something that's now in the courtroom. The other thing that I think it's one of my own fields is that of alternative dispute resolution. Mm-hmm. Indiana is a leader in mediation and ADR and having that possible. Because when someone goes to a lawyer, they have a problem. They want a solution. And sometimes going to a trial is not the best thing to do, but they want something to be worked out. And I'll give you another example of that. In Indiana, if you file for divorce now anywhere in the state and there are children involved, you are required to go to mediation. Because I think Randy and the court made it a policy, a public policy, that men and women in black robes are probably not the best people to decide the future relationship of a family that's breaking apart when there's children there, and suggesting that you have ADR. So Indiana, Virginia, and Florida, I think, are leaders in that. A couple other things. Mm-hmm. I think Randy mentioned, we have a growing diversity in this state. And someone comes in and English is not, they're not their first language. Mm-hmm. They have a right to someone not to just translate the word, but as a person who knows the substance behind those foreign words, to make this as clear as possible for those people, for this undaunting experience of going to court for the first time. The other thing that I'd mention is, unfortunately, we have seen the proliferation of foreclosures that are hitting the state. The court saw as an opportunity to help folks in need, so that they're not always kind of getting churned by the system, churned not in terms of having something wrong happen, but the system kind of grinds them up in their lives. What happens to their house and you know, the whole national economy has changed. Can someone help someone understand what's happening to them and also understand what their rights are and what their goals are? So there's a whole mortgage foreclosure system that is because of Randy's leadership in Indiana. Those are just a couple of the words, but Sheila made light of it, and I'll make light of it again. I mean, the play on Randy's last name as a shepherd.
Yes. Yeah.
I think Randy saw, and maybe he didn't make this a conscious decision, but as the Chief Justice of Indiana, and that's what his title is, that he is the shepherd. He has to lead the flock to new fields, and the flock is the Indiana judicial system, all the way down to the small claims courts, and those that appear before it, and also protect the flock.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that he's done quite well, because there's lots of little things. Randy realizes that taking a moment, talking to a judge that is brand new, has a problem, is good use of his time.
Mm-hmm.
He also realizes that what showing up means.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Matt Tully had a column last year about Randy and Amy going down to Manual High School.
Mm-hmm.
And by their presence, saying that band and or that orchestra that wants to raise money is important. And sometimes by just using your office in that very silent way, but the presence, I think, and he did that in a lot of different instances that we will never know about. But there are judges that their lives are better because of they knew they had that support. And that is using the court and the whole system, which she's talking about, as an instrument of some very positive change.
We are talking about the legacy and tenure of Chief Justice Randall Shepherd. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to pick up on some of the things John Krauss said. And really what I'm gathering here is that some of one of Randy Shepherd's most significant achievements is really improving the administration of justice here.
Absolutely.
In this state. Did it help that to some degree he was a politician or had been involved in politics before he came to the bench? Sheila Kennedy.
Oh, I think very much so. And in fact, one of the criticisms that is currently being leveled at the United States Supreme Court is that there wasn't anyone there who was ever a county sheriff or an elected official, and therefore Citizens United, to use an example, is a decision that might not have been made if people had come to the court with a little bit more practical electoral experience. I'm not going to comment on that, but I think that, and in fact, your question is an excellent one because it goes into something that I thought of when John was talking, and that is that I think Randy has used the bully pulpit, if you will, and that bit of political savvy that you refer to not only elevate the profile of the court statewide, which we alluded to before, but to make it more of a player, the court more of a player with the legislature. You know, we have a legislature that I won't characterize right now. But anyway,
and that is, bring it back to you, but I know that's one of the things that Attorney General Greg Zeller has said is one of the most significant achievements of the Shepherd Court is that Chief Justice Randy Shepherd made the Indiana Supreme Court a co-equal branch of Indiana state government.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No,
Sheila.
That's okay, because that's exactly the point I was about to make. And I'm not sure of this. John is much better about the sequence of these things. But I think it was Randy who first inaugurated the now traditional speech by the Chief Justice on the state of the judiciary that is made to, you know, you've got the state of the state by the governor. You also have the state of the judiciary by the Chief Justice. And, he has worked really hard, I think, to use the political skills that are appropriate to the judiciary. It's interesting, when I teach my students, there is this sense that, well, judges aren't political. And yes, you laugh, and quite appropriately. It's a different kind of politics. You don't want the kinds of partisanship that John mentioned were characteristic of the court before Randy's appointment. But you do want political savvy. You don't want a court that is, deaf to the current political environment and the likely consequences of either framing a decision in a certain way or making a decision at all if it's avoidable. There's a great deal that I think people begin to understand about the justice system as a result of Randy's really important efforts to educate people about the role of the courts and what justice is supposed to look like. I mean, those are sort of added duties of the court. They're not what we think of. We think of the court as, these guys in black robes, and they're still all guys, I would notice. Telling you who wins this particular case. But it is a job that if done properly, is much larger than that. And I think Randy did it properly. He understood that. But I absolutely agree with the intent of your question, which is that I think you have to have a little bit of political savvy, political experience to understand those dimensions of that job.
You know, sometimes you got to see what other people think about the court.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just cite four things.
Mm-hmm.
Randy was the chair of the American Bar Association's Appellate Judges Conference, which is 700 appellate judges around the country. Randy was the chair of the ABA's committee that accredits law schools.
Mm-hmm.
Randy was the chair of the National Conference of State Chief Justices around the country. You don't have those roles unless you're doing something that makes you unique and your mm-hmm. court is doing something that makes you unique. I'd say before Randy came, those organizations were probably little known in Indiana, and the representation that went to those things were little known. But to have Hoosiers be on those organizations and then have significant leadership roles makes Indiana stand out as a leader. And then, you know, others say, well, okay, you're doing law for Indiana's citizens. Yeah, you are. But you look over and 900 majority opinions that he wrote. And he's been in 64 law reviews around the country.
Well, and that's the point I want to talk about. We've talked and established, I think, pretty clearly that he is a superb and even revolutionary administrator. I'd like to talk a little bit about where he stands as an interpreter of law. I mean, where that takes it into a different arena to some degree, but, you know, in terms of the opinions, the decisions he actually moved the court toward, how do those stack up? And by the way, I would invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Sheila Kennedy, you know, in terms of, are there any landmark decisions or that you could cite, either good or bad?
Actually, it's been a long time since I was a practicing lawyer, and so no particular decision is coming to mind. But again, in the mm-hmm. when you talk about interpreting the law to those who either come before the court or who live in the community that depends upon the court, I think one of the things that I have really appreciated is, as you know, John, I have this silly little thing about the Constitution. I kind of like it. And I also think that maybe it'd be nice if people understood what it really said as opposed to what the latest crazy pundit says it said. So that kind of thing is very important to me. And Randy has done more than any judge in this state and probably more than most around the country to help educate people about constitutional mm-hmm. premises. I know that he has one article he wrote about the putting a new wind in the Indiana Constitution, something, by the mm-hmm. way, many people don't understand that states have constitutions mm-hmm. as well as the federal government. I think perhaps his ambitions to do that were not as realized as some of his other ambitions, because for a variety of reasons, including the fact that courts can only decide cases that actually come to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if a particular issue is not raised in a particular piece of litigation, the judge can't really go out and talk about it. But certainly if you put aside simply the the issuance of those opinions from the court, from the bench, and you look at what Randy has done to work on issues of civic literacy, civic education, civic engagement, the Civic Health Index, all of those efforts to try to focus attention on the need to improve constitutional competence, as we call it, at the School of Public and Environmental Affairs, because our job is to train public officials who will then go out and need to live within the constraints of that constitution. They need to be constitutionally competent. In a very similar way, and I think Randy understands this very well, citizens need to be constitutionally competent. They need to know what their rights are and what their rights aren't.
But I point out, the court is five individuals.
Yes.
Randy's one individual.
And he would make that argument.
I think, well, I hear him buzzing in my ear here. because, but the thing of it is what the court has done, and those five individuals, and I think usually, I don't know for a fact, but it's a majority of them, have seen the cases that come up for appeal. And on a whole, if I make a generalization, they don't have to take a case unless they want to take a case.
That's right.
So I think there's a judgment of, okay, what happened? Was the was the decision done below for some reason wrong, and we need to correct that? Or what will this case clear up in terms of policy for Hoosiers in the future? So by looking at the individual situation, but then looking to where do you want law in Indiana to go or get away from where it is, then that's how why you pick a case and you hear a case.
Are there places where he did that, where he moved law away or took
well,
it to a, in a
I,
different
I like
direction?
Sheila. I don't have my Lexis printout of these cases. But the court is known for not backing off from controversy. A lawyer told me, don't file an appeal in the Supreme Court if you don't want an answer. And you may not get the answer that you want, but you'll get an answer. And the court did not shy away from those things. So I think it's using all five of the the justices and moving Indiana in a new way. So
which
that,
gets back to the political skills, leadership skills.
Yeah, it's not partisan, but it's understanding the atmosphere in which you're working, and that is the politics of Hoosier citizenship.
We are talking about the tenure and legacy of retiring Indiana Chief Justice Randy Shepherd. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Wanted to ask real quickly, you know, in terms of a point that that Sheila Kennedy alluded to, how he wanted to make the Indiana Constitution much more relevant. Sheila said that, you know, people often forget that there are state constitutions as well. He, when he was here on Monday, the Chief Justice cited that as one of the things he takes the most satisfaction in. I think it's fair to say what Sheila did, that reasonable people can disagree about that. How effective has the Shepherd Court been at making the Indiana Constitution relevant, Sheila Kennedy?
Well, I do the one case that absolutely comes to my mind is an appeal from the tax court by the legislature. Some years back, the Indiana Civil Liberties Union at the time represented the town of St. John in northwest Indiana. And the background of that case is kind of important. For years and years, it was sort of an open secret that our property tax system in Indiana was wildly unfair, that the assessment process was, you know, you could have a house that was worth $100,000, I could have a house that was worth $100,000, but if we lived and we could live next door to each other, but if the line for the taxing district went between our homes, you could pay double or, you know, your house could be assessed in dramatically different fashion. And that had been something that the courts had simply ignored, because when people would bring a lawsuit based on that essential unfairness of the system, typically those cases would get settled on the courthouse steps so that the state wouldn't have to change its ways. When Randy's court upheld the tax court decision in that situation, it changed Indiana law, and it was on the basis of the Indiana Constitution.
I want to talk a little bit more about that. We are talking about the tenure and legacy of Chief Justice Randy Shepard's time as Chief Justice here on No Limits. I am John Krall. We're talking with Sheila Kennedy and John Krause. Please stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the tenure of Indiana Chief Justice Randall Shepard. We're fortunate to have as our guests John Krause, who is Indiana University Public Policy Institute director, and Sheila Kennedy, who is an IU professor, political science, and the School of Public and Environmental Affairs. That one you run out of breath to get through. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Roberta, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
I was put on hold, Ms. Kennedy said about what I was going to say.
Okay.
But what I was about to comment on was that when the Supreme Court made its decision regarding the property tax change to move from true tax value to market value as the basis, I was new to the state of Indiana, and I didn't realize until this show that had Randall Shepard not made a change in the direction of the court, that that might not have been heard by the Supreme Court. And I think that's a really important factor, that those things can be resolved through the judiciary and not have to wade through legislative change.
Well,
thank you very much for the call, Roberta.
Thanks. That was a decision that, as I said, the five, a majority of the five, decided to hear the case. But what Sheila pointed out is the case was originally heard by the tax court. This was a new court in Indiana's appellate system, because tax cases in the past had gone generally to the Court of Appeals, and then they would bubble up to the Supreme Court. So, but in this situation, you had one judge who heard controversies about taxes, who had expertise in that area, who could then get into this. But I'd say that that decision was kind of like the little child's snowflake bubble, and it got shook up. Mm-hmm. And I think that the flurries of the snowflakes are still fluttering to the ground even today.
We are talking about the tenure of retiring Chief Justice Randall Shepard here on No Limits. We've gotten an email question from a listener, AJ, who says, without taking away from Justice Shepard's accomplishments, it is frustrating that there are no women serving on the state Supreme Court. It is difficult to believe that he was without influence in the selection of new justices, and he has certainly failed to be outspoken in the matter. Sheila Kennedy, is that a fair indictment or assessment of the situation?
I don't think the indictment is necessarily fair, but I do share the questioner's annoyance at the situation, at being a female myself. I think that is, not to cast big stones, but I think that at least during the last 7.5 years, that is an accusation that has to be lobbied at our governor, because the governor has had an opportunity to appoint women to the court and has failed to do so. And I just have my doubts that Randy Shepard had very much to do with those decisions. Now, I have no special understanding of that, no special knowledge. It's just my knowledge of Randy and of the governor and of the process. But I would say, if you're going to lay blame, if you will, I don't think Randy is the culprit.
Females have been on the final three that
John
have
Krause.
Gone to the governor. Last time there was a vacancy, and this time there's a vacancy.
Yep.
So I think females, minorities, and others are applying to the court.
And being found to be competent to sit on the court, which is an important thing.
But have not been.
But not been selected. Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
We are talking about the tenure of Chief Justice Randall Shepard here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi. I do appeals in the Indiana Supreme Court, and I've made a number of oral arguments before Chief Justice Shepard's court. Most of what I do is criminal law, and I wanted to go back to when we were talking about how the Shepard Court has kind of given new life to the Indiana Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Two areas, that one very significant, is double jeopardy under the Indiana Constitution. Of course, you can't give less protection under a state constitution, but you can give more. And, Richardson versus State was a landmark decision. I don't know that it was Chief Justice Shepard's decision, but it was definitely under his court, where they dramatically expanded the protections for double jeopardy under the Indiana Constitution. And as well under search and seizure, I think under Justice Shepard's court, there's been an expansion of Indiana claims, Indiana state constitution claims under our search and seizure on the Indiana Constitution. So those are two areas from the criminal law standpoint where there has been some, I think, dramatic changes and new life given to the Indiana Constitution. Like I said, to the point where I rarely raise a federal double jeopardy claim anymore. Almost all of it's under the state constitution now.
Thank you very much for the call. We'll take that up. Thanks, Matt.
Well, and that just
Kennedy,
demonstrates
please.
That neither John nor I practiced criminal law.
No, we
so we were not we as aware, and I really appreciate that call.
Well, and I also, in thinking about one of the earlier, Roberta's comment about the property tax case that Sheila Kennedy was alluding to earlier, it also strikes me that there was an understanding of the relationship between the court, you know, that there are things, the whole property tax issue, even with a court ruling, was, I'll use understatement, politically volatile, to say the least. But there's no way it would have been dealt with, I presume, if the court had not ruled, had not taken that. And in some ways, is it fair to say that he understood the court's responsibility and the opportunity it has to change the political dynamics and change the political discussion? John Krause.
A lot of times that a court can act and they can find a rather narrow solution to the problem that's before them in a very technical way, but everything is status quo. That case, they didn't do that. Mm-hmm. They just said it's unconstitutional, it doesn't work. But it's interesting because when they said it's unconstitutional, they said the General Assembly should act to correct this. Mm-hmm. Now, for a lot of reasons, good or bad, the General Assembly didn't act to correct it. And we went through sessions, through sessions,
yes.
through sessions. And Sheila and I are in public administration and policy teaching at IU. And one might say the General Assembly waited to the last moment in which they had to kind of swallow the whole pizza at once, mm-hmm. which made it a little hard to digest for Indiana citizens. But I want to just leapfrog a little bit because another thing that Randy has been recently noted for is leading the effort when Governor Daniels asked him, and then Governor Daniels asked the sitting governor that he defeated,
Kernan
Shepard, to co-chair the Local Government Reform Commission. Because I think Randy could have very well said, oh, no, that's the other branch of government. I'll stay out of that. I don't have a role there. He didn't hesitate. He just said, okay, those cases have been decided, and if I have to recuse myself if something comes up from this, so be it. But his knowledge of local government, his knowledge of the things that came before the court, his knowledge of that case helped him work with that seven-member commission that my institute staffed to say, what's the best way that we can improve and make local government effective for the 21st century? Now, granted, all those things had to be enacted by the Indiana General Assembly, and not a lot of them were enacted for a whole host of reasons, and that's a whole other show. But Randy saw that his presence could bring some legitimacy and integrity to this effort to assist another branch of government to parse through some rather difficult problems that had been in place for a long time. So that's a role of leadership that I think is significant.
We have we've talked an awful lot about accomplishments here. I don't think to give anything resembling a sort of fair and balanced, we probably ought to, I ought to ask the question, were there missed opportunities? What things could have been accomplished that weren't during his tenure?
Well, the cases that weren't heard, I mean, there's probably dozens of those that someone said, you know, this would have really changed Indiana law, and we could have done something different. You'll never know about those. And you know, could judges pay for years was just it was dormant, and people were leaving the bench because they couldn't support a family, send kids to college, or advanced education, and judges pay was there. I know the courts and the Judges Association advocated for those. Who knows? I mean, there's probably a host of those things that one could cite.
Sheila Kennedy, please.
The other thing that I know was near and dear to Randy's heart and has not been addressed, not for lack of trying, is this whole issue of elections of judges.
Yeah.
I think the academic literature is pretty clear that you get a better, a more legitimate justice system when there is a process for appointing judges that requires a vetting of a variety of sorts.
Look at the Supreme Court. Perfect example of this, the change.
Yeah. And I know Randy worked hard to try to get the way in which Indiana judges are chosen changed, and that didn't happen. So that would be one.
What was the roadblock there? I mean, what you say?
Politicians.
Politicians, yeah.
But what was the political argument against it, John Krause?
Well, I think local political machines want lawyers to support the judicial system, and that's kind of the last reward in some cases. I think the competency of the local benches has improved drastically. You know, now there is a Indiana Judicial College that the Supreme Court pushed to start having advanced education for judges. Now there's also continuing judicial education required of judges so that they're up on the law. They know it. Now, before we end, I want to point out one thing. As a young guy out of college, I worked in the State House, and I remember walking around
that
state.
Did not scar you.
No, but I remember walking around that State House, and it was kind of seedy, bordering on being kind of dumpy. Mm-hmm. And they had light bulbs that didn't work, fluorescent bulbs that wouldn't work. They had old soundboard on walls. The Supreme Court looked rather tattered and tacky. Mm-hmm. Randy has a interest in historic preservation. He's been a leader in historic preservation in this state. He's been on the National Trust of Historic Preservation. He knows the value of preserving history for future societies in terms of architecture and communities and the like. But there is no better representation of that than the Indiana Supreme Court chambers today. It is a beautiful chambers, and it shows the glory of preserving the past, but making it relevant for the future. If Bob Orr is governor and Randy Shepard did nothing else over their careers, and they did, is they left a beautiful legacy which will transcend to new generations, because the State House is a beautiful building today. The Indiana Supreme Court chambers is a beautiful room today. And you know, school children and adults should go see it. But that is another aspect of Randy, which I think is dear to him, is historic preservation. And he put his efforts where his interests lie in terms of making a statement about that courtroom.
probably ought to talk in the little bit of time that we've got left. What is the challenge now before the non-Shepherd Court, the court that will come? What's the biggest one confronting it, Sheila Kennedy?
I think it is to continue to operate at the level that Randy established and that his colleagues established, because that is not a one-man show. That is the court itself. But I think, like John, I remember the court that preceded Randy, and I think that if we went back toward, not that, again, not that it was a terrible court, but it was a mediocre court.
It's leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
that's right.
If someone moves out of the spotlight, yes. And there's no one to walk into the spotlight,
void, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Indiana will lose. And as Sheila's pointed out, and I've tried to point out, it's five individuals.
Mm-hmm.
It takes the shepherd to lead the flock. But if we don't do that, someone gets up and they can't hit the ball over the plate when they give a State of the Judiciary speech, then we're going down a notch. That hasn't been the case. It's a goal. It's an opportunity for the next CJ to do that and his colleagues to do it.
In a word, what would you, Sheila Kennedy, say people are going to remember Randy Shepherd for?
Leadership and integrity.
Okay, John Krause?
A public servant with a heart.
We have been talking today on No Limits about the legacy and tenure of Chief Justice Randall Shepherd. This was the second part, really, of a two-part conversation. We had the first part with Chief Justice Randall Shepherd on Monday. I'd like to thank my guest today for leading us through what was a lively and provocative conversation, John Krause, who is the Indiana University Public Policy Institute Director. You guys have very long titles.
Yeah.
John, thank you very much for being with us today. I enjoyed talking with you. And Sheila Kennedy, who is an IU professor of political science.
No, public policy.
Public policy. Yeah. We had that wrong. Okay.
Yes.
I apologize.
Not a
and
problem.
School of Public and Environmental
right.
Affairs. Sheila, pleasure talking with you. Thank you for joining us today. We will be back next week when we will be talking about the issues and challenges of employing the disabled. You can join that conversation next week at 1 p.m. here on Thursday. I am John Krall, host of No Limits. Thank you for spending this time with us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.